Sabrina George part, is it part three?
Three,
new
yes.
comedy radio.
Part 27.
With Chambers and Middleton. Yeah, so we got to the point, so you've decided now that you're going to go and do a little bit of stand-up.
Yes, I have, yes.
In between all your other fabulous bits and pieces.
Yes, I have.
So you went to see this gig, which you started the interview with.
Yes, I went to see this gig, and then that led me to meet Dave Johns.
Right.
And he suggested...
Who's a comic on the circuit.
And he suggested that I do So You Think You're Funny. Okay. He said, if I just get myself 7 minutes together...
Which is a competition.
So having had about 6 weeks' experience, I entered So You Think You're Funny, and I went to Edinburgh, because I'd got through the first lot of heats, and then while I was at the final heat, it was quite stressful. It was the first time I got a little bit of the, shall we say, challenge from other female comics who were higher in rank.
Who I wanted to punch,
yes.
Because I went to watch, of course I went to Edinburgh to watch her.
And I kind of went, oh, because everybody had been just lovely up until that point there. And I kind of went, oh, it's not like acting at all. People are really supportive. And weirdly, once you get to the point that we're at now, you do find that there's a fantastic camaraderie. And that's what I've had up until the point of this competition. And I kind of went, oh, not quite sure about that. But we're still kind of continuing. And then we moved to London, and then I started to do gigs in London, which were a little bit weird because I would be driving around and it would be a matter of not really knowing where anything was. Didn't know whether Dorking was north or south of where I wanted to be and what my gigs were and one thing and another. And I'd really done that for the briefest of time when Lynn and I were invited out to tea, really, at someone's house that she was working with. And Lynn had met the lady through one of the jobs she was doing, but her husband was actually a guy called Alec Lom, who was the son of Herbert Lom, who was the actor. And he just pointed out, while we were sitting around the dinner table, that we were a natural double act. And had we not thought of actually working together...
Oh, really?
So it's all his fault.
So it's sort
He's always
of,
in here.
It's,
is he?
Yeah, always. Yeah.
It sort of gave us permission to have a go at it, and it seemed like it was going to be easier. Because
when he said that, did you suddenly go, oh, actually? Or did you go, oh, I don't know?
Well, it was funny because we'd moved down to London and I was trying to get into the singing down here, you see, because I'd come off the cruise ship because, I mean, we do go through this thing about, oh, you were away, because you miss so much when you're at sea. You know, you've got no idea what's going on in the news. I mean, at that point, we didn't have internet on the ship and, you know, you literally heard very
we're
little
an
about...
island on your own, yeah.
And it is a completely different way of life.
Yeah,
everything's fine.
Yeah, we're all right. Thanks, honey. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So we decided that... So as I say, I'd been on the ship and I decided I wanted to get off because I'd been doing it on and off for 3 years. And I'd kind of done what I needed to do because I'd been in the cocktail lounge at first and then I'd done cabaret while I was on there. And then I got booked back on to do cabaret. So I'd done some cabarets. So I'd started then to be cabaret, which was a bit more money and, you know, but you weren't working as often, which actually was not quite as good. So I did all of that, and then I decided to move to London, and we moved down. So I was trying to get into singing here, so I'd done a few kind of jingles and a couple of bits and pieces, but incredibly difficult to then try and get myself into, you know, to try and get an agent and all of that. So I was kind of struggling to get into the singing side, and that was when Alec suggested. And I thought, oh, well...
We just thought we'd have a go, you know what I mean? It just seemed like a good idea. You know, I wanted to do the circuit anyway. And as I say, the truth of it is, he was dead keen and he wanted to help. And it just seemed like it was going to be easier. What I don't think either of us reckoned on was that once we got into it, we'd get hooked. And weirdly, the more people who went, ugh, double acts don't work, the more that
challenge
rises in you, where you go,
we're going to make it work.
We are going to make it work. Yeah. And weirdly...
And also, as things happen sometimes, when you start off on a path, very often you get early kind of... It goes well at the beginning, and then you go, oh, this is brilliant, and you get sucked in, and then all of a sudden it becomes really bloody hard work. But you've already hooked by
established
that
yourself in
and,
that area,
you know. And we got to the final of the Hackney Empire New Act Award, and it was our ninth gig. So we were like, oh my God.
We had a lot of people who, in those early stages, were giving us such very good feedback. We had not a clue about the construction of comedy, about how it works, about how clubs work, about the psychology of it, about how difficult it would be to actually organise a life where two people have to check everything with each other, because they work, not only do they have to work and do the gigs together, they have to arrange to rehearse. I mean, it was easy in that at that point we were still living together, but then that very ease becomes the problem, because inertia sets in and actually you end up just doing nothing. You know, our entire day would actually start with us determining that we would be up early so that we would do some work. So I'd hear her get out of bed at about 11 o'clock and think, oh, I better get up. At which point, we'd be in dressing gowns, sitting in front of the telly watching Richard and Judy, going, no, the girl with the x-ray eyes, that could be a piece of material. Then, of course, it would be lunchtime, at which point, yes, we would have something to eat.
We'd have to eat.
The news had to be watched, because who knows?
We might turn into a topical act.
We may be topical. Very well, maybe topical. Before you knew it, after you'd had your lunch, you were creeping into, well, actually, I think we got into some strange television watching of psychics on living TV.
Oh, we did, didn't we? I forgot about that.
Just
what
in
was
case.
It called?
We watched a lot of Crossing Over with John Edwards. There's months of my life gone away with Crossing Over with John Edward. Then, of course, it would be some kind of countdown, which I was never really bothered about.
Quiz.
She likes, you know, she loves a few kind of boxes and ticks.
I love a
concise,
please, calendar, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yes. By that stage, you've got the evening news, tea,
yeah,
and I think you'll find then the day's work is over. A number of years of our lives slipped away like that. Both of us having to hold down kind of
all
little part-time jobs.
Correct, jobs in to keep different, it going, yeah.
Well, Lynn had good jobs.
I had good jobs. I had, I was a PR consultant for the GlaxoSmithKline. I did all of the charitable donations. And I worked for them for 7 years and did events at 10 Downing Street with Tony Blair and things with Sarah Ferguson and things with Princess Anne, the Queen, Science Museum.
And the next minute down to Working Man's Club to try and...
Well, by this point we were doing stand-up. Yeah, this was in London. Yeah. And I did all of the PR for the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra for a number of years. And I did an education project through all the Sensations exhibition for the Royal Academy of Arts. So I was doing lots of different contracts and stuff.
I was busy working at Macmillan Publishers, selling books to librarians.
Who were the very best people to sell books to.
Sell books to anybody. No, librarians,
they love books. You get on the phone and you can hear their juices flowing.
I was a researcher for Macmillan Publishing. We were on the Strand, I think the office was. But I was in the libraries the whole time. But working with those libraries. Happy people, librarians.
Do you know what?
Happy, jolly.
Macmillan was a lovely period in my life. It'd get you about 4 o'clock and suddenly you'd hear and you'd go, oh, that's a bottle of champagne, someone's published a book. Oh, I drank heavily at
we
my
bankrupted we did I did the Dictionary of Art. We
bankrupted. Oh, actually, I used to sell the Dictionary of Art.
Well, we bankrupted them, they got taken over by the Germans.
Yes, well,
we spent so much money paying our researchers like hell they did.
Do you know what? There's a game that we used to play, which is probably why the Dictionary of Art went bankrupt as well, called the Muffin Game. This is how I used to film my afternoons at work. And people would just get a bit bored, they'd be sick of ringing people, it'd be about 3:30. And we'd go, let's play the Muffin Game! And someone would have to go out and get muffins. Then the muffins were named, and someone could suggest, it was often me, what the muffins were. And it was like the Spice Girls. So you get 4 muffins, or 5, because I believe Jerry was still with them at the time. And each one of these muffins, like blueberry, chocolate, double chocolate, cherry,
banana,
they would all get the name of a Spice Girl. But then what you had to do to get a muffin was you had to name a Spice Girl. But it's secretly the muffins had been named. And of course, we all know that in the hierarchy of muffins, double chocolate is kind of like key. That's what everybody wants. And then chocolate was kind of secondary. And the last thing you want is cherry. Cherry muffin.
That's really
And I will never forget this wonderful lad called James, who used to speak Russian. getting what he got, which was, you know, he would go, you know, they go, right, what, you know, who do you want? And he'd go, Jerry Spice. And him getting the package, opening it and going, oh no, I knew ginger would be cherry muffin.
Wonky Donkey was the other thing.
Oh, I used to play Wonky Donkey. I used to love Wonky Donkey as well. Oh, the times I used to sit with this guy called Tim and we used to sit and draw Wonky Donkey. I was clearly not quite cut out for office work and spend most of my time finding ways to entertain myself.
So in the meantime, while we were doing these jobs, we were doing open spots on the circuit. So we were literally putting the double act together and doing the open spots on the circuit.
So where were you getting the material from if you weren't getting it whilst watching telly or working? What forced you down to get a piece of material? If you really thought, right, crunch time, we've got to get 4 minutes together by Saturday, what would you do?
Well, it was hilarious. And we did the... we had 5 minutes of material when we did the Hackney Empire. And then when we got there, they said you had to have, I think it was 8 or 9 minutes for the final.
It's generally similar,
and
yeah.
It was a nightmare trying to then write something else, which we did, because the first 5 minutes came really easily and it was great. It was funny and everybody was going fantastic. One of the first pieces of material we wrote was the Star Wars piece, which was the... the members of the royal family as Star Wars characters. So the Queen was Darth Vader, and Prince William was obviously the last Jedi Knight, and you know, the Queen Mother was
Yoda,
and that used to go down a storm at the time, and we had another piece of material as well, but to find the next bit, and I remember we did the Hackney Empire, and. Being terrified because we didn't really know the other 3 minutes that we'd written, and cocking it up.
I think also as well. I think our approach to writing has changed as it evolves. As you the more you compare, the more you realise that often the most instinctive and direct things are funny. And what you try and do when you first start writing...
The unspoken question in the room, the uncommented
thing. You overcomplicate, you overanalyze to begin with. You actually try and pull something out of the air. And it's never out of the air. It's always around you or it's in you. And I think that's just something that you learn. I think some people naturally get it, or they stumble into it early. I think most people have to fight for it and actually... It's often because they've listened to other people going, do you know what, that's what's funny about you too. Or that, and I think nobody understands
it's really difficult
how
to double
hard
act.
It is to make a double act have some kind of inner chemistry and a very direct connection with the audience. The age of, I mentioned them earlier, Fry and Laurie, French and Saunders, that was a different circuit when there was lots of double acts, because then the audience understood sketch in a way that they don't now. Now, if you can't talk to them directly, if you can't muck about, interact, and then go back to a few jokes, you are sunk as a double act in the circuit. There's a good reason why we are the only female double act working the circuit, and why they're really, I can't even think of another double act that does what we do.
No, there isn't anybody doing the crosstalk. There are people doing songs. We started out with songs and sketches. That's how we began. When we went to Edinburgh that first time, there was very little chat between the two of us. There was little bits of it, but they tended to be connecting bits to get us to the next sketch. So it was all sketches and it was all songs. But once you got into the clubs, we realised we couldn't go down that route because... There's no way that the crowd are going to keep quiet while you do some kind of fourth wall sketch up there, not in the club environment. I mean, you know yourself what it's like. You've got to literally make sure that you can interact with the crowd. So that was kind of took us in a different direction. And also when we looked around, you look at other people doing sketches and you think, well, you know what, they're pretty good actors. You know, what makes us different? And we went down that route of going, do you know what, sketches, okay, but there are a lot of people out there doing sketches. Nobody's doing what we're doing. And that's why it's taken a while.
Exactly. And how would you define what you're doing now, then?
I would say that we are the modern equivalent of your real old-style crosstalk. Abbott and Costello, Morecambe and Wise. You know, and I know those are lofty titles, but there is nobody doing the talk-based, character-based double act. Except us.
And actually, the character-based stuff has become even more so recently. We've just done the Camden Fringe, and we put a new show together, and we're literally on rewriting that. And it went incredibly well during the Camden, but we know there's more work to be done on it. And that is now we no longer share a flat. We've been able to go back to all of the things that happened when we were sharing a flat, when we were working. So literally, it's based around our life together as a double act. Mm. So the show is about us living together. Mm. And the premise is also of me wanting to get Sally out, because it's my flat and she's sharing, me wanting to get her out, and me wanting to stop being the double act and going back to being a singer. So that's the premise of the show.
Right.
So it's me trying to tell her that it's all over, and she's quite happy, you know,
ignoring it.
Ignoring me, yeah.
Yes, being a bit lazy.
Yeah. So it's all based in truth. Everything in it has a truth, but obviously you push it to her.
Yeah. Well, you see, this is the thing that we realised that to actually be a double act, then you have to work on the premise that things blow up, things happen, but less said soon is mended. However, there's not an awful lot of comedy in that. So
no.
We've had to dig into the weird stuff, the stuff that is the polar opposites, and push it. And actually, then you realise that some of the things that you thought were you know, really
nothing,
kind of out there, you know, that they become part of a new piece of material or a new angle that suddenly has an angle on everything.
There's stuff. One day we were getting changed in a toilet somewhere, you know, and I mean, you know what it's like where you go to gigs and people say, oh, I'm sorry, we haven't got a dressing room, and you go, all right, that's fine. If we've got a disabled toilet, we're quite happy, you know what I mean, because at least there's a bit more room.
Yes.
But we're getting changed in a toilet somewhere, and I was just like, oh God, I've got to lose some weight. I'm literally, we're getting dressed now, I've got to lose some weight. I went, do you know what, I don't think I've ever been this fat. She went, oh, you have. Which made us both laugh. And we went, we've got to put that on.
I meant it in a kind way.
Yeah, she went, oh, you have.
Oh, you have. You know.
And so that started a whole piece of material about me wanting to lose weight and her having a go at me, going, oh, you have. Oh, you want, what you want to do is this. So it literally then eventually becomes a three or four piece of material, piece of material about me trying to lose weight and what I should do to lose weight. And you're not going back to Weight Watchers, you know, oh God, no, I'll try a different meeting this time. Yeah, don't go back to the one that overlooks the school playing fields, you know, all those kids outside kicking footballs at the window chanting fat bastard while you're having your weigh-in. All of these different things coming around.
And the fact that again, naturally, Lynn is organised, Lynn is a little bit anal, Lynn likes things in a certain way. When she used to go away on the ship and then she'd come back to me living in her house, she'd be prancing around the living room telling me what had been going on. And then she'd cast the eye over, you know, her eye over the dresser where I had dusted because she was coming home. And she'd kind of look at the ornaments and she'd be chatting away to me. And then suddenly I'd see her and her hand would flash out to some little polar bear sitting on the surface and she'd just squeak it into the middle. And then she'd carry on as if I had noticed that she was straightening pictures and moving things to the middle. And this kind of OCD stuff that we've actually managed to revisit. Obviously, it's much harder to find bits of my weird behaviour.
So, yeah, Sally's can be quite antisocial at times. She likes, you know, she's because it is like, what does she do in that room? And she like, she, you know, she scuttles away, but she keeps fish and a number of different things. So yeah, it's based, a lot of it's based in truth, and then we just pushed it.
So what do you want to do? Do you want to carry on doing live work, or do you want to move into telly or radio, or, you know, where?
All of it, Sabrina, get it for us now.
Can you do that?
Can you do that?
There's a little person over there. Excellent. I can speak to.
Good. That's what we want.
But you fit. I mean, do you feel a bit like, well, we'll carry on doing the double act for a little bit, and that if we don't hit this target, we'll do something different? Or do you just feel like you're going to be a double act until you decide not to do it? I mean, do you have a plan?
Do you know what? I don't know that we have got a plan, but I do think what we have done is we've really concentrated on trying to make things better, to actually get better at it and enjoy it. But I don't think we've ever just gone, we are a double act and that's all we do. There's always been little other things on the periphery that we've done in our lives, be it bits of writing, be it, you know, other little jobs, other little areas. And I think that what we will always do is we will keep pushing out like that. I don't know that you can go, unless this happens, then I'm not going to do that. Mm. I think what you've got to do is, you, if for me, as long as I'm enjoying it, As long as
I'm all right, thanks.
Fine, thank you.
As long as I'm enjoying it, as long as we're moving forward, as long as I'm getting a kick out of it, as in the double act, brilliant. Mm. But there's so many other things, and if you don't put a feeler out, you don't know quite where that's going to take you. So that's not much of an answer, but that is definitely
just
what's going on in my head.
For me,
really,
as a solo act, I'm terribly envious of double acts, or what I assume, because I think, God, it must be great when you have a great gig that you can go, hey, together. And if you have a shit gig, you can go, oh, together. There's that sense of having...
It's like everything, isn't it? You always go, there are fantastic parts about it, and then there are really difficult bits. The most difficult part is sharing the money, you know, because there are the odd gig that pays us 1.5, but the rest of the time we have to share everything.
We are married financially. Yeah.
Literally, we share a car. We've both bought flats now, which is quite good, but it is a case of, it isn't going, this is how much money we've got, we split it down the middle. It's going, right, you've got that to pay, right, there's that. Or she'll go, I've got 300 quid in my knicker drawer. I'll go, brilliant, can we use that for this? We literally have to look at it like a married couple. And it isn't, that's your money, this is my money. No. This is, we are working together for the greater good.
I don't think it would have worked any other way.
It wouldn't.
I don't think everybody could do it, because you do have to just kind of give up to it, and you have to go, it'd be all right.
And there's times when, you know, luckily it's never happened at the same time, but there's been times when I thought, I can't do this anymore. I could just get a proper job, I could earn a lot of money, I could have a nice life, I could go on a holiday, I could do all of these different things, and it would be wonderful.
But I think a solo act says that as well, and
I think we've both had it at different times, but you know, there's a loyalty there, which you is really, you know, even our accountant can't believe the way that we are with the way that we work together. And there is a real loyalty. There is a real love there that people find difficult to understand. Mm. People have come up to us after gigs and gone, God, I'd love to have a friendship like that when they see you on stage. Mm. And it's more than that. It's closer than family very often as well, you know. But it's quite difficult to do. Mm. But
Hugh Thomas, you know, he used to be at the King's Head, which is a comedy club in North London. He has been involved in comedy for probably 25 years. And he once said to us fairly early on, he went, you'll write the book about this one day. And in a way,
how to do a double act.
Because I think he saw that it's a dying art, because it's terribly, terribly difficult to give up your autonomy for a collective project.
And it's difficult to get into the clubs. And, you know, I was talking recently to Jay the folk singer. We were talking about her, and she started doing a double act. And I spoke to her recently on the phone, and she said, it's really difficult to get into the clubs. And they do all music. It's kind of like a folk music act. I've not seen it, but I've heard it's good. She said it's really difficult to get into certain clubs and to get open spots. And we went, yeah, you know, it really is. You have completely different to being a single stand-up, because there just aren't the double acts around.
Well, my general feeling is that the club's getting more and more prescriptive about what they perceive comedy to be, which is a single white male doing gags.
Yeah.
And if you come outside that, it gets harder and harder. And I hope there's going to be a revolution soon, and we'll get change around again, where comedy is comedy, it's not about...
You do have to be a bit bloody-minded and a bit pig-headed to have got this far.
We've got through a lot of the business. Snotty nose, looking down the nose, well, you're not really stand-up. You're not really this, you're not really that. And it's like, if I had a pound note for every time somebody said to me, you are not, yes, but you're not really this, are you not really that? And it's like, why do you have to put us into some kind of box? The audience laugh, the audience love it, and that's really the greatest measure that you can have.
No, I think the greatest measure, weirdly, is when your peers are laughing.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, and that's the great thing about the job. You know, being in the dressing room, mucking about with the most bonkers, hilarious, unusual people is why I do the job.
But also,
I think sometimes if I could have a scenario of something else, what would it be? And I find it very, very difficult, because so much of this fascinates me.
So, I think it's endlessly fascinating.
You get to a point as well, because we've been doing it now for some 9 years, and we've literally battered our way through. Once you get accepted, and which, you know, thankfully we are now, and we're part of the circuit, it's the best job in the world. And there are still some clubs that won't book us, because we're a double act, or they think we're shit, or we're this, or that, or we're not this, and we're not that.
Too tall.
Yeah, I'm too tall. But again, there are clubs that we will keep going
bashing
back
us,
to at times.
Yeah.
In a way that they will accept other acts in it because they are a single male, whatever it might be. But yeah, once we've kind of broken through that into doing it full time. So. It's a different sort of way of doing it, really.
If you were offered a 3-year touring thing with the Royal Shakespeare Company,
there would be an outcry.
From whom?
Theatre audience in general.
No.
And what about you? If you got some amazing record deal to be as
I'd do the two
go.
Alongside.
Right.
No, I wouldn't. The double act, I think, will. I think there's probably going to be times when, you know, Sally's writing all the stuff and doing different things. But the double act, at the moment, is the main thing in our lives.
That's the day job, weirdly.
Yeah.
You give up the muffin game.
And we've done, you know, we do a number of different things. We're working with other production companies on some stuff for children's TV, some other, so lots and lots of different things that all add to it. Because if you only have that, and there was a point when we only had that, and actually, it becomes you go round and round on a merry-go-round, and you go, this is just not good to focus only on it.
It takes too much. I think that's the thing with comedy. Weirdly, you do need a lot of attention for it, a lot of focus. But if you actually concentrate on having that, it's like it slips away.
It kills itself,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. You know. But I think it happens to everybody. Absolutely everybody.
One of the most disappointing things I saw was Chris Rock in London. 2 months in the UK and not 1 minute of material about the UK. And I thought, where have you been for 2 months?
Yeah.
Why haven't you spoken to anybody?
Yeah.
Some of his material went so flat because he just didn't get a really easy reference correct. And he just thought, don't you go and sit down. I mean, I love that, sitting down, having cups of coffee, listening to random strangers, having a bit of a chat. And if you don't do that as a comic,
but you do
you
that
die.
On the way to every gig. You know, you're doing
generally other loony comics are also talking. Yeah.
Before you've even entered the stage, you've absorbed what's going on.
And observed.
And some of it is processed and given back to them, and that's part of the audience going, oh yeah, we're all in this event.
It's
happening one
now.
Night only.
Yeah.
And it's about us and them and everybody else. Yeah. Well, I think you've been absolutely fantastic. All right, that'll be enough for now because you've got terribly important executives to see.
Of course.
So much, White Flowers. That's the end of part 3.
Thank you. Lovely, Sabrina.
Thank you. That was really good. Enjoyed that.